Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations. music from Indigenous Australia from their CD, Voices of the Red Heart. The song you heard was entitled Tengari Pari, Medicine Man's Spear. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we feature a Native American cultural history perspective that was presented at the National Black Arts Festival Summer Institute for Teachers. The National Black Arts Festival is the largest annual multidisciplinary festival of the arts, humanities, and artists of African descent in the world. It is a cultural institution that provides teacher training, curriculum development, and youth leadership development. NBAF provides diverse voices and a collective spirit. The city of Atlanta, Georgia is transformed for 10 days every year as the National Black Arts Festival showcases the arts, cultures, and wisdoms of the African diaspora. One very special and important part of this event is NBAF's educational program under the leadership of Dr. Colette Hopkins of Clark Atlanta University. Clark Atlanta is one of the finest institutions in the historically black college and university consortium of higher learning. The central mission of the Institute for Teachers is to provide a variety of artistic and educational experiences that have the potential to deepen understanding of African American history and culture. The National Black Arts Festival Education Program is designed to increase knowledge and understanding for children, youth, adults, and education. In 2002, I was invited to serve as a resource person for the 2002 National Black Arts Festival Summer Institute for Teachers. The theme of the week-long intensive interactive educational program was Migrations. Dr. Hopkins' classroom programs in Children's Education Village explored the migrations period in African American post-Civil War history from 1865 to 1920, an important era in United States history. I was honored to present a perspective on this period, highlighting some of the Native American history that paralleled what was occurring to African Americans in this post-slavery time. In today's Wolf Mountain Radio program, you will hear my lecture from the NBAF Summer Institute for Teachers on this subject. Dr. Colette Hopkins is one of the finest educators in America. I am very honored to be her friend and colleague. I first met Colette at a wonderful conference whose theme was Teaching for the Environment in Higher Education, the Promise of the Earth Charter. Dr. Hopkins' presentation, quote, HBCUs and the Challenge of the Environment, unquote, focusing on environmental studies and environmental education, was particularly important to me. Her paper discussed many similar issues and challenges I also have been working with as an environmental justice activist and environmental educator in people of color communities. While her subject matter primarily referenced African-American environmental challenges, there were many similarities with Native American educational institutions and curriculum. Her paper, along with other fine presentations, such as my article, quote, Message of the Firefly, unquote, are presented in the fall 2003 publication, Earth Ethics Journal, available from the Center for Respect of Life and Environment, one of the co-sponsors of that excellent Chiwanki Symposium. At the National Black Arts Forum, there was an outdoor educational exhibit area where children and youth could interact with a model sharecropper cabin in village in order to learn about the life and hardships of their ancestors during this historical era of 1865 to the 1920s. I had the pleasure to have my Native American exhibit table, where I got to speak with children and youth every day. Sharing cultural history with so many young people was the highlight of my participation at the 2002 National Black Arts Festival. Adjacent to where my exhibit under a majestic oak tree was a troop of black U.S. Cavalry soldiers. It was an authentic 1880s cavalry camp exhibit. They and their horses were dressed in the uniform of the famous Buffalo Soldiers of the 1800s. For the benefit of our worldwide listeners, the Buffalo Soldiers were segregated black soldiers in the United States Cavalry. Most of the Buffalo Soldier units were ordered to hunt and kill Native American Plains Indians of the West. American Indian warriors did respect the Buffalo Soldiers for their bravery and toughness. I understand the name Buffalo Soldier comes from these black soldiers' toughness and strength, an attribute of the buffalo, which Plains Indians admired. Before we listen to my cultural history presentation, we will hear Bob Marley's song, Buffalo Soldiers. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kenan One Tarkwisin, to all of our relations. in Native American Cultural History Perspective, 1865 to the 1920s, by Ones A. Pritzker, Yad Kiddushi Native Center, presented to National Black Arts Forum, 2002, Summer Institute for Teachers, Atlanta, Georgia. I would like to thank Dr. Colette Hopkins for inviting me to the 2002 Summer Institute for Teachers program. I am honored to be here. I have been asked to provide a brief Native American cultural history perspective for the time period 1860s to the 1920s, in keeping with your session focus theme of migration and survival. I shall do so by sharing some insights and encouraging questions from the audience. A quick quote from President Theodore Roosevelt expresses the attitude of this era well when he said, quote, "I don't go so far as to think that the only good Indians are dead Indians, but I believe 9 out of 10 are, and I shouldn't like to inquire too closely into the case of the 10th, unquote. An important characterization of this so-called pioneer time period and what was happening to my Indian people was the theft of indigenous people's homelands and the destruction of much of our traditional cultures by westward expansion on the part of the white man we call Wampisketonk. Open warfare against Indian peoples, desecration of sacred places, destruction of tribal food subsistence, such as the deliberate killing off of the buffalo, military roundups, and forced removal relocation of entire tribal communities, brutal attacks on women and children by so-called civilian volunteer posses, and the purposeful outlawing of Indian language, clan life, spiritual ceremonies, and traditional cultural lifeways characterized this era of forced migrations and severe struggles for survival. Before I continue my focus on this historic period, often referred to as the reservation era, I feel it is important to briefly remind everyone that this Western expansion period was built on earlier colonial aggression from the very first arrival of the Europeans to my Nichitanganooks, to my ancestors. Time permits me from too much detail, but let me share a few comments as example. One, the misinterpretation or whitewashing of Indian-white relations at early contact, for example, Plymouth Colony, the origins of scalping, slavery, Reverend Elliot prayer towns, militias like Rogers Rangers, or massacre at the Great Green Spruce Swamp, for example. Two, the broken treaties, warfare and forced relocations of the Tussalgee Cherokee, 1785 Hopewell Treaty, the 1791 Holston Treaty, the 1794 Philadelphia Treaty, or the 1798, 1804, and 1806 Tellico Treaties. 3. President Thomas Jefferson's 1802 plan for removal of Indians west of the Mississippi. 4. James Monroe's 1825 plan to Congress for Indian removal west with the Choctaw, Chickasaw Creek, and Seminole peoples. 5. 1830 passage of the Indian Removal Act under President Andrew Jackson. So the abusive historical period of the 1860s to the 1920s, which I will now continue speaking on, must be seen as a continuation of a genocidal policy against Native America by the United States from its earliest beginnings. Survival for Indian people has always been hard since first European contact. The 1860s through the 1920s time period was certainly no exception. In fact, for the indigenous peoples of the West, this was probably their worst period in history. This was a time of massive westward expansion by a greed for gold and land. This was, of course, justified as, quote, manifest destiny, unquote. As Chief Luther Standing Bear said, quote, "We did not think of the great open plains, the beautiful rolling hills, and winding streams strangled with tangled growth as wild. Only to the white man was nature a wilderness infested with wild animals and savage people. To us, it was tame. Earth was bountiful, and we were surrounded with the blessings of the great mystery," unquote. This was the time of the United States cavalry campaigns The official U.S. government policy was to exterminate the red man. Many Indian nations had heard of the brutality of the Civil War. The Plains Indians also knew about the infamous Trail of Tears, or what the Indian people called Nudadunstunt. How General Winfield Scott and 7,000 soldiers in 1838, practically the entire United States Army in the East, had forced Cherokee and other tribal peoples, such as the Creek, Choctaw, and Chickasaw and Seminole, off their ancestral homelands to march at gunpoint to a far-off distant land, then called Indian Territory. As you know, many, many Indian people died along the way, and this news also reached the Western Indian nations. It is important at this point to mention that at the outset of the so-called Plains Indian Wars, many of the native nations were in fact militarily strong. The United States government at first sent representatives to make agreements for safe passage of U.S. citizens through the vast tribal territories. Native nations, coming from a culture of generosity and sharing, did agree to allow travel across their lands, so long as those who did so respected Mother Earth and our tribal sovereignty. These agreements, our treaties, did contain very specific provisions in order to protect their tribal lands and animal relatives we lived with. As we all know, good relations between my Indian people and Anglo-America did not last long, if it ever did. By the 1860s, the so-called frontier became the Wild West. Several examples. 1862. The Santee Dakota had already been forced to live along a small section of the Minnesota River, forced out from their watershed by 150,000 settlers. December 26, 1862, President Abraham Lincoln ordered the largest mass execution. 38 Santee Dakota Sioux were simultaneously hanged because they dared to defend their sacred homelands. 1863, Minnesota organized, quote, volunteer, quote, scouts for Dakota scalps. Nimi Ipu, more commonly known as the Nez Perce, their ancestral territory encompassing some 17 million acres, or 27,000 square miles of what's now called parts of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, nearly 50 tribal bands made up the Nez Perce Nation, inhabiting the Clearwater River Basin, Snake, Columbia, and Salmon Rivers. By the mid-1850s, white settlers had already encroached on their villages, and so in 1855, the Nimi Ipu agreed to a treaty with the United States to establish boundaries to their lands. By 1863, the President of the United States, under more pressure by settlers, forced another treaty, which resulted in three-quarters of the former treaty lands taken away. Forced relocation to a small reservation in Idaho became their fate. Some of you have probably heard of the efforts of Hinmatun Laket, more commonly known as Chief Joseph, in their proud defense of the U.S. Cavalry in the Bitterroot Mountains. This, of course, was with General Howard, the same Howard that historically Black College and University, Howard University, is named for. One other example, please. The United States military campaign of Colonel Kit Carson against the Dene Navajo. His legacy is one of murdering some 10,000 Dene Navajo before forcing a brutal relocation of largely defenseless women and children in the infamous Longest Walk from Fort Canby to Fort Sumner in 1863 to 1864. Carson and his soldiers burned and destroyed cornfields, burned hogans or homes, slaughtered livestock, raped women, and sold young girls and women into slavery since they were reported to have good weaving skills. Time permits me for more details or numerous other examples I could cite. From what I've said so far, you all should have a good view of the situation faced by my Indian brothers and sisters during the early years of this era. Continuing on, other actions besides army battles against Native America during this time need to be mentioned. The use of biological warfare against my Indian people was undertaken in the form of deliberately handing out winter blankets infested with smallpox. Washington reasoned that if the cavalry couldn't kill us off, then perhaps smallpox would. Remember, Indians were considered as vermin, something to exterminate. Forced imposition of Christianity and the outlawing of Indian religion is another serious issue. The United States government sanctioned missionaries spread out across Indian country like fleas on a dog. Traditional beliefs and ceremonies were outlawed. Many sacred prayer places were desecrated by mining, logging, grazing, livestock raising, or plowed under for farming. The violation of the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty, for example, where the Lakota tried to protect their sacred Pahasapa Black Hills, is a prime example. General George Armstrong Custer first skirmished with Lakota warriors when he commanded a military escort for a United States 1874 Geological Survey crew in the sacred Black Hills. That struggle still continues to this day. Medicine men and women were stripped of their authority and publicly humiliated. Sacred items such as prayer bundles, pipes, priest robes, and other religious paraphernalia were destroyed. Cultural spiritual traditions such as vision questing, clan initiation, naming ceremonies, marriage, and numerous prayer ceremonies for each season, as example, were not allowed. Those who resisted were often jailed and beaten. We Indians were considered ignorant heathens, and our spiritual leaders were under the control of the devil. Some of the so-called white liberals of the day thought Christianity was the only way to tame the savage. So in keeping with earlier colonial fervor, the United States sanctioned missionaries to convert Indians into so-called human beings. How many of you know about the massacre of peaceful Tistista Cheyenne women and children by Christian minister Reverend Shivington in 1864 at Sand Creek? I consider Christianity one of the worst and most devastating impacts ever suffered by our native peoples. How many of you know that it's only been legal for us Indians to practice our beliefs since the 1978 American Indian Religious Freedom Act? Even still, we have to fight for religious freedoms in U.S. courts. Residential schools. Residential school forced removal of Native children from their home to be totally whitewashed. Many of these so-called boarding schools were hundreds if not thousands of miles away from the children's tribal home. One infamous institution was the U.S. Army Carlisle Barracks in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. If you are ever near that army post, I urge you to visit the small Indian cemetery adjacent to the west entrance gate. The worn-out tombstones attest to the range of different tribes whose children were taken from. The army's success at trying to make white citizens out of us Indians was poor, so a policy change encouraged Christian missionaries to try and civilize us. Now, it was church-run institutions that physically and emotionally brutalized generations of Native children who suffer now, today, as adults. All traditional culture, beliefs, and values were to be wiped out. Children were severely punished if they tried to speak their native language, ask about their families, or practice Native ceremonies. This current revelation of child abuse and molestation by clergy, one can imagine what Native children suffered by the forced boarding school experience. Some 80 residential schools were working like factories to destroy Indian life in its heyday. Three-fifths were Roman Catholic, one-quarter Anglicans and Methodists, Presbyterians, and God knows what other Christian ministries have been responsible for this horrific part of Native American history. Another major aspect of this reservation era of the 1860s to the 1920s period was the further attempt to steal more Indian land. This was done by passage of the 1887 General Allotment Act, more commonly called the Dawes Act. It is important to remember that by the late 1800s, most once strong Indian nations who lived in large tribal territories had been reduced to remnants of their once expansive homelands. in just a half century. Many Indian people were killed or rounded up and relocated onto reservations. These reservations were a small fraction of their original land base. Reservation life was characterized by severe poverty, near starvation, and forced guided confinement to peoples who were used to living a wide-ranging and enriching life. Most of the reservations were more like large prison camps. Much of the land was arid, barren, and rocky, unsuitable for farming or to support livestock. To make matters worse, most reservations garrisoned armed soldiers who often abused the Indians. Accounts of rape were not uncommon. Many Indian people died under these harsh conditions. When military commanders did not follow through with their directives to care for their Indian captives, Congress assigned the so-called Indian agents to manage the reservations. Most of these agents were corrupt businessmen. They stole the limited food and clothing provisions that was earmarked for the Indian people for their own profit. Survival during these times were very harsh. Returning now to the General Allotment Act, Massachusetts Senator Henry Dawes, along with many other senators who were eager to exploit Indian treaty trust lands, developed this title law, which resulted in the loss of two-thirds of the little remaining reservation land left, even after all that had been swindled in violation of many, many treaties. Within a decade, most Indian families were landless squatters. The icing on the cake came in 1890, when the state of Oklahoma was created by taking one half of the remaining land base of what was called Indian Country. While some Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, Seminole, and Cherokee property was able to remain in Indian hands, during the Dawes Act, 5 years later, they lost much of their Oklahoma land by Congress's 1895 Curtis Act. How does one conclude this subject? The 1860s to the 1920s was a horrific time for Native American peoples. As I've mentioned, most of our ancestral lands have been stolen. Once numerous nations have been reduced to remnants of a once free and wide-ranging people. Rounded up and corralled onto dry, barren reservations under military guard, imprisoned if caught trying to hunt food to feed one's family, prohibited from practicing ceremonial beliefs or traditional culture, having his spiritual leaders shamed and sacred items destroyed, kidnapping of children in order to ship them off to so-called boarding schools to, quote, civilize, unquote, the savage. Hunger, cold, and sickness from military commanders who had no concern for our people. Fanatic missionaries who imposed their way on our spirit. Corrupt Indian agents who stole our meager survival rations. The slaughter of our animal relatives, the buffalo, beaver, and deer. The destruction of our sacred forests. The tearing up of the grass prairies and the poisoning of the rivers from miners, greedy congressional land schemes, and United States presidents who think that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. This was largely how it was for Native America, 1860s to the 1920s. I thank you for your attention. I now welcome your questions. Aho, Kinawan Tokwisin to all of our relations.
Medicine man standing by the hillside, and this is what he was saying to his people:
run, run, Indian, run, run while you can. Here comes the white man.
Clear. listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kidichi Native Center. Yat-Kidichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kidichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kidichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kidichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat-Kidichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat-Kidichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat-Kidichi's Kinonwatakose Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat-Kidichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kidichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat-Kidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
Take you heard prior to our Yat-Kidichi Native Center program identification was a traditional song from the drum Lakota Thunder from their Makoshe Music CD Veteran Songs. The name of the honor song, Pien Huska Okizi Olawan, honors those warriors who fought General George Armstrong Custer and the Lakota defense of their sacred Hesapa Black Hills. The first song you heard following my cultural history presentation was the classic song from Buddy Redbow, Run Indian Run, from his Journey to the Spirit World cassette. I want to again thank my friend and colleague, Dr. Coletta Hopkins, for inviting me to be a resource person at her 2002 National Black Arts Festival education program. Dr. Hopkins is a fine educator and environmentalist. She and I share the same concern of encouraging more people of color to become involved in environmental issues. We both work to culturally diversify the environmental conservation movement. This is urgently needed. Another colleague of hers at Clark Atlanta University and friend of mine is Dr. Robert Bullard. Bob is a nationally recognized environmental justice scholar activist. He directs the Fine Environmental Justice Resources Center, whose website is www.ejrc.cau.edu. Dr. Bullard is a prolific writer and is a co-founder of the National Black Environmental Justice Network. I know Dr. Bullard from my participation at the historic first National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit in 1991 and from a number of other environmental justice conferences and events over the years we've worked together in. Those of you who are concerned about environmental justice, as well as environmental issues affecting the African American community, I encourage you to check out Dr. Bullard's Environmental Justice Resources Center website, which is again www.ejrc.cau.edu. Another fine organization I've networked with is the African American Environmentalist Association. Their website, www.aaenvironment.com. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. We shall conclude today's broadcast with Richie Havens' classic song, Indian Land. I especially appreciate the song lyrics that are excerpted from treaty language when our Indian ancestors agreed to giving up some land to the United States in exchange for large reservations that would allow our Indian people to live well and in peace. These treaties, legal agreements, meant that Washington would not steal any more Indian land. Well, we all know that these promises were never honored by America. Part of the song lyrics are, as long as the sun shall glow, as long as the wind shall blow, as long as the stream shall flow, as long as the grass shall grow, these lands are Indian lands. Well, dear friends, we thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wan Tokwisin, to all of our relations.
As long as the sun shall glow, as long as the wind shall blow, as long as the stream shall flow, as long as the grass shall grow, this land shall be Indian. Indian. As long as the fish shall ring, as long as the bird shall sing, as long as the deer shall spring, as long as their life shall bring, this land shall.
shall be new. India, hey yari yambero, hey yari yambero, bande bande bandera, bande bande. As long as a baby's small, as long as a boy grows tall, as long as a man shall grow, as long as this earth's a ball, this land shall be in Dali.
Ashkwe, hello. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. If you enjoyed today's program and would like to contact Wolf Mountain Native Radio for more information, please do so by emailing us at yatkittishy@earthlink.net. Our email is yatkittishy@earthlink.net. Aho, kinawantakwasin to all of our relations.